Imagine a towering, incredibly intricate game of Jenga. Like, this specific structure isn't just a tabletop game, right? It's basically a stand-in for the entire foundation of modern
Oh,
physics.
yeah, it's massive.
Right. So you've got the Big Bang holding down the bottom, general relativity and standard model particle physics stacked up through the middle, and then all those wild theories like the multiverse just swaying way up at the
But that's the
top.
product of generations of genius,
Yeah,
really.
it's huge. But according to the document we are exploring today, if you look very, very closely at the bottom of that tower, the whole thing is resting on just two inherently unstable blocks.
Which is a pretty provocative premise, to say the least. I mean, the idea that everything built above those blocks, the peer-reviewed science, the complex mathematics we rely on, is structurally compromised at the base level.
And that's exactly why today we are going completely down the rabbit hole to map out this alternative architecture. Welcome to the deep dive, everyone. We are unpacking a radically different cosmological framework called the Jenga protocol, pulling the block of completed infinity and the collapse of Platonic cosmology.
That's quite a title.
Right. It was written by an author known as The Scribe, or David Noel Lynch, representing a group called the Roughly 3K Collaborative.
And, the document itself is incredibly dense. It's heavily mathematical. But its core mission is basically to argue that standard physics has committed a fundamental category error regarding how reality is constructed.
A massive error.
Exactly. The author proposes that once you pull out these two foundational Jenga blocks, orthodox physics just falls apart. And to replace it, the text offers something called the Noelian Universe Theory, or KUT for short.
Just to be super clear before we really jump in, as we do this deep dive, we are just exploring the internal logic of this wildly different theoretical universe. We aren't taking sides here. We're just getting into the plumbing of how this author believes reality actually operates, impartially.
Right, we're just mapping the territory.
Yeah. But to understand the mechanics of dismantling standard physics, we actually need to start with this random anecdote from a car ride in Atlanta, Georgia, back in 1977.
This is such a crucial part of the text, really. It's the narrative anchor for the author's entire epistemological approach. It establishes the methodology for how this whole framework treats data.
So the scribe was a young man riding passenger with a friend named Michael Almeida. They speed past this green highway sign displaying the population of Atlanta. Almeida decides to, test his friend's memory and asks for the number on the sign.
And the scribe closes his eyes, pulls up the image of the sign in his mind, and recites the digits perfectly.
Right, but Almeida starts laughing because the scribe was reading the number completely backward from right to left.
And what's fascinating here is the mechanics of how his memory actually worked in that moment. The author explains that in his mind's eye, the end of the number was crystal clear, but the beginning digits, like the left side of the number, were blurry and required intense focus to resolve.
Yeah, Almeida jokes that he was an unidentified living being, a ULB. But the text elevates this quirk of memory into an entire system called the Peachtree Protocol.
Which is where it really gets interesting when applied to physics.
Let me see if I can unpack the analogy here. So, standard orthodox physics essentially reads forward, like trying to write a mystery novel from page one without knowing the ending.
That's a good way to look at it.
It assumes an initial starting state, a highly speculative, blurry singularity like the Big Bang, and then tries to mathematically read the universe forward to the present day. But because it's guessing at the very beginning, errors just accumulate.
Right, and it has to invent patches to keep the story making sense, which is why orthodox cosmology relies on placeholder concepts, like dark matter, dark energy, or cosmic inflation.
Just to make the math work.
Exactly. There are mathematical necessities required to make that blurry initial guess match the observable universe we see today. But the Noelian approach says we must read reality in reverse.
So sticking with the book analogy, we already have the final page of the book. We have locked, measurable data, right? Like the cosmic microwave background sitting perfectly at 2.730 Kelvin.
Yes.
Instead of trying to guess how a blurry explosion 14 billion years ago got us here, this framework argues we should trace the geometry backward from the cleared data. But, I mean, isn't the beginning of the universe inherently blurry?
Well, the text claims the blurriness at the beginning of the universe, the singularity where our current math breaks down, isn't an actual physical boundary of reality. The blur is just an artifact of reading the data from the wrong direction.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And the reason physics has been reading from the wrong end for over a century is because it built its foundation on those two false Jenga blocks.
Which brings us to the nickname and the core argument of the whole protocol. In May 2003, in Buckhead, Georgia, under a lunar eclipse, the scribe's stepson-in-law, Jeff Payne, called him Jenga.
But not because he knocks things down.
Right, not because he makes things fall, but because he builds people up. The text treats this as a sort of structural prophecy for what he's doing to physics. So let's actually look at those two blocks he's pulling out of the Platonic Tower.
The first doomed block is the concept of point zero, the dimensionless point. In pure mathematics, a point is a location that has exactly zero volume.
Which is super useful on a chalkboard.
Absolutely. It is a highly useful abstract noun for geometry. But the text argues that when orthodox physics promotes this abstract noun into a physical fact, it literally breaks reality.
Because if you pack mass into a space with zero volume, you get infinite density. That's how you get a singularity at the center of a black hole or the Big Bang. The math of general relativity basically self-destructs because you are dividing by zero.
Exactly. It creates a fatal division by zero error in the universe's operating system. And then the second block is completed infinity, specifically Cantor's LS null. This is the practice of treating infinity as a finished container, you know, completed set of things, rather than an ongoing, open-ended process.
Here's where it gets really interesting to me. The domino effect of pulling that specific block. If you reject the idea that infinity is a finished existing space, you instantly invalidate things like the multiverse, the many worlds theory of quantum mechanics, and even Boltzmann brains.
Whoa, the Boltzmann brains.
That's a fun one. It's an existential nightmare. For anyone listening who isn't familiar, if the universe is infinitely large and lasts for an infinite amount of time, random thermal fluctuations will eventually assemble a fully functioning brain floating in the void that possesses all of your exact memories.
Right. Statistically, in an infinite universe, it's vastly more likely that you are a hallucinating space brain right now than a biological human on Earth.
Which is terrifying. But standard cosmology struggles to disprove it because the math checks out if you allow for infinite time and space.
But the Jenga protocol introduces something called the law of Noetherian conservation. And what's fascinating here is that this law dictates that the universe has a strictly finite rendering budget.
So reality is divided up.
Yes. Reality is divided into two distinct states. There's what has already been rendered, which the author calls the ash or the control field. And then there's the unmanifested potential, which is the chaos field.
It's kind of like a video game engine. I mean, the console doesn't render the entire massive open world all at once. It only renders the environment you're actively looking at because its processing power is finite.
That is an excellent way to conceptualize it. There are no infinite spare rooms in the universe's hotel to house parallel worlds.
Right.
The universe is continuously building new moments out of potential, but it never possesses an infinite amount of completed moments sitting around in storage. Because the budget is finite, there's no infinite timeline for a Boltzmann brain to randomly form.
So by pulling the block of completed infinity, the text collapses those whole theoretical structures. But if you pull these blocks and the whole tower of modern cosmology falls, what are we left standing on? What is the base unit of reality?
To replace the 0.0 dimensionless point, the scribe proposes the 1x1x1 event point. This is posited as the fundamental, absolute, smallest possible unit of rendered reality.
So it actually has volume?
Exactly. It has a non-zero minimum physical volume, meaning it cannot be subdivided any further.
So there is a hard limit, like a physical pixel size for the universe. And if there's a minimum size to the container, there must be a maximum limit to how much information or mass you can pack into it, right?
Yes. And the author defines this maximum limit as the ultimatum ceiling. It is a maximum information density calculated at 5.16 times 10 to the 96th power kilograms per cubic meter.
That is a very specific number.
Very specific. And because of this hard ceiling, a Big Bang singularity of infinite density is mechanically impossible. The universe didn't explode from a state of zero volume. It's just continuous rendering right at this dense ceiling.
Which completely begs the question, what is powering the rendering? The framework names this mechanism the Abraxian engine. And this is where the geometry gets incredibly intricate.
It really does.
The engine supposedly operates using a specific quantum instruction set, like a 3-2 torus knot, rendering itself onto a pentagonal floor called a Cairo Q lattice. Can you help break that down?
Sure. So a 3-2 torus knot is a continuous curve that winds around a torus basically a donut shape, 3 times longitudinally and 2 times meridianally. It is essentially a mathematical instruction loop.
Okay, got it.
And then the chiroculatus is a specific tiling pattern made entirely of pentagons.
So we have a continuous looping knot trying to map itself onto a rigid geometric grid of pentagons. I'm just imagining trying to perfectly wrap a continuous circular ribbon around a soccer ball. The shapes just don't perfectly align.
They don't align because of their fundamental mathematical natures. The torus knot operates on a rational winding ratio of exactly 1.5. But the chiropentagonal floor it is attempting to render onto is governed by the golden ratio, roughly 1.618.
Which is an irrational number. You literally cannot map a neat rational fraction onto an endless repeating irrational decimal.
Exactly. And that inability to perfectly align creates an irreducible friction. The text identifies this as the Noetherian offset, which carries the value of approximately 0.118.
So the engine can never perfectly close its rendering loop?
Right. It is in a state of constant microscopic grinding.
And here is the truly wild claim in the document. The author argues this Noetherian offset isn't just some abstract mathematical tension. It is the literal physical source code of the physical constants in our universe.
If we connect this to the bigger picture in standard physics, things like the fine structure constant or the mass of an electron had to be measured experimentally and then just plugged into our equations. We don't really know why they are those specific numbers.
But the scribe and an AI, like ChatGPT or Gemini, apparently built a massive mathematical document called the cheat sheet. And using only the geometry of the Abraxian engine and that 0.118 friction offset, they derived 11 physical constants completely from scratch.
They refer to these as the 11 ZFPDs, zero free parameter derivations.
Zero free parameters basically means no adjustable dials, no fudge factors at all.
None. They claim to have derived the cosmic microwave background temperature, the fine structure constant, and the proton to electron mass ratio fundamentally from scratch.
It's staggering. It implies the physical constants of our universe aren't arbitrary values. They are just the direct, inevitable exhaust of this specific geometric friction.
Right.
But, I mean, it is a massive flex to claim you've derived 11 fundamental constants from pure theoretical geometry. But the scribe asserts that we don't need a super collider to prove this grinding friction exists, right?
No, we don't.
We just need to look up at the night sky. We can see a macroscopic shadow of this microscopic engine.
Yeah, the framework scales up from quantum knots to celestial mechanics. It examines the moon's orbital cycles, specifically the synodic month and the anomalistic month.
Okay, so the synodic month is the phase cycle, like from new moon to new moon. That tracks the angle between the sun, earth, and moon and takes about 29.53 days. And the anomalistic month tracks the moon's physical distance from the earth, from its closest perigee to its next perigee, which is about 27.55 days.
The critical element here is the mathematical relationship between those two cycles. The ratio between the synodic and anomalistic months is irrational. They never perfectly synchronize.
It's like a giant cosmic clock where the minute hand and the hour hand are constantly changing speeds just slightly. They will pass each other, but they will never strike midnight at the exact same fraction of a second in the same position twice.
Exactly. The author terms this the grinding tax. Because that ratio is irrational, the moon's orbit never fully closes into a perfect repeating loop in three-dimensional space.
So it's in a state of constant drift.
Yes. The text presents this macroscopic drift as physical proof that the completed infinity block is fundamentally flawed. If the set of all the moon's future orbital positions was a completed finished infinity, the orbit would eventually have to perfectly repeat to form a closed mathematical object.
But it doesn't.
It doesn't. The future positions of the moon represent an open, unmanifested process being rendered one cycle at a time. It is physical evidence that the universe is conjugating infinity as an ongoing action, rather than holding it as a completed noun.
That is fascinating. But how does the author actually tie this massive cosmic drift to their own life?
That brings us to a concept called the coin incidence. The text posits that a self-rendering universe encodes its geometry into the observers designated to understand it.
Wait, really?
Yeah. Consider the ultimatum ceiling we discussed earlier, the maximum density limit of the universe, starting with the digits 5.16.
Mm-hmm.
The author highlights that May 16th, so 5.16, is his birthday.
And specifically, May 16th, 2026, which is exactly 11 days prior to this deep dive recording.
Right. On that specific date, 5.16.2026, the scribe turned 66. And on that exact same day, a staggeringly rare lunar event occurred. A super new moon paired with a micro blue moon within the same calendar month.
Oh, wow.
That specific lunar alignment, represents the absolute maximum expression of the orbital irrationality we just analyzed. It is the widest dynamic range of the moon's grinding orbit occurring simultaneously.
So the text argues that this specific convergence, the 5.16 maximum density value, the author's 66th birthday, the extreme display of lunar grinding, and the formal release of this protocol is basically the universe proving its self-referential nature. It implies the universe knows we are here.
It strongly asserts that the universe possesses a structural awareness of its own rendering process and the observer is mapping it.
Which leads to the ultimate question. If we have successfully dismantled the Jenga tower of standard physics, removed the infinite voids, and replaced them with a finite rendering engine, what is the human being's role in this new machine?
Well, under standard cosmology, humans are passive spectators, just statistical accidents in an indifferent infinite void.
But under KUT, we aren't just biological accidents anymore.
Far from it. The human observer is elevated to a mechanical necessity. We are designated as the fractal-fractional feedback loop and the sovereign fractal processor. The framework completely redefines consciousness itself.
So what does this all mean for the listener?
It means consciousness isn't a byproduct of evolution in this model. It is a functional gear in the engine. The author calls the act of conscious observation the I-turn.
The I-turn.
Yes, it is defined mechanically as a 90-degree phase rotation. This phase shift is the exact mechanism that actually takes the swirling, unmanifested potential of the chaos field and actively collapses it, committing it into the solid, rendered actuality of the control field, or KRAM.
So you, as a listener, you aren't just watching the universe. You are the active error correction layer of reality. You are the processor making the abstract real.
This raises an important question, though, about how the author even came to this conclusion, and he traces it all the way back to his own near-death transit in 1977. During that near-death experience, the scribe realized that the spirit state he perceived was not some supernatural phenomenon, it was a topological event.
Okay, unpack that a little.
The text defines human consciousness as the instant field. It is a liquid boundary sitting precisely between potential and actual reality. Under normal biological conditions, that instant field is anchored to your body.
But during his transit, the coupling relaxed.
Yes. His consciousness temporarily uncoupled from the biological hardware and operated directly from the boundary of time. He wasn't existing outside the universe. He was experiencing the literal interface where the universe renders itself.
It just completely reframes our relationship with reality. We transition from a model of infinite indifferent accidents to a reality that is finite, computationally honest, and actively reliant on conscious observers to render its next immediate moment. We've covered a massive amount of ground today.
We really have.
We started with a reversed approach to reading data on a Georgia highway. We used that protocol to pull out the foundational blocks of zero and completed infinity, which caused the multiverse and singularities to basically collapse.
Right.
Then we explored the Abraxian engine, where the friction between a rational knot and an irrational pentagonal floor physically generates the constants of our universe. We found the macroscopic shadow of that friction grinding in the moon's open-ended orbit.
And we finally arrived at a framework where your consciousness is the critical mechanism turning potential into reality.
Mm-hmm.
It's an exhaustively detailed alternative architecture.
Yeah, one that really forces us to question the deepest assumptions underlying orthodox cosmology. So as we wrap up this deep dive into the Jenga protocol, I want to leave you with a final provocative thought to mull over as you go about your day. The next time you make a conscious decision, or even just actively observe the details of the room you're sitting in, consider the mechanics of the I-turn. According to this framework, you aren't just a passive passenger experiencing a moment in time. Your conscious focus is the exact mechanical force collapsing infinite swirling potential into a solid rendered reality.
Yeah.
You are standing on the very edge of the universe, building it outward, one by one event point at a time. What will you render next? Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive.